Okay. Anyway, we'd like to welcome everybody to the 13th lecture, Shiur, in the Megillah Nevuchim on creation. This is the 13th. And we're going to focus today on chapter 22, Perek Chaf Beis. This is in Chelek Sheni, the second section of the guide, in the Schwartz edition, which I only have in front of me right now. It is on page 330. The Rambam, Maimonides, to briefly give a brief overview of what he's doing, the Rambam is actually producing arguments which are raising doubts or raising uncertainties in Aristotle's theory of the eternity of the universe. The last chapter, 21, the Rambam indicated that one cannot interpret any eternal theory of the universe as being an expression of God's will. He mentioned a certain group of philosophers who tried to understand that somehow one could interpret or build will into a deterministic theory of the universe, and the Rambam rejected this, which means that there has to be an alternative to the, in other words, you cannot have eternity and will at the same time. Now, the Rambam is going to continue to raise doubts, in his own language, to raise doubts concerning Aristotle's theory of eternity. Where the Rambam really wants to get us to, let's, you know, summarize a little bit at the very end, at the end of chapter 22, on page 334, what the Rambam really want to get us to is to a point where, in fact, things are a draw. In other words, he has not refuted Aristotle's theory, as we've mentioned many, many times. The Rambam does not really claim to refute Aristotle's theory, but he raises enough doubts that we can say it's a draw, it's a take-o. And at the very end of chapter 22, the Rambam says that given the fact that it's a draw, so therefore one can, in fact, actually make a decision to follow the Nevuah of Avraham Avinu and Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay? Now, so on chapter 22, the Rambam is going to raise what he feels to be doubts and issues with Aristotle's theory of creation, and Aristotle's eternalistic theory of the creation of the world. As the eternity and creation are actually a contradiction in terms, but was Aristotle's theory of the eternity of the world. Okay, so let's begin chapter 22, and we'll see what he has to say. Okay. Kaviyah shemaskimim aleh aristo v'chol ha'oisim philosophia hi, shemidova poshut yochol ischayev rak poshut echad. In other words, something which is composed, when we say dova poshut, I guess that is probably most aptly to be translated as one type of substratum. So, what the Rambam is saying is that it is agreed upon. In other words, it's agreed upon in Aristotle, and those people who follow Aristotle, that if you have a certain object which consists of only one substratum, then it can only determine an object which is also of only one substratum. Now, for example, if the object is composed of several substrata, right, then in fact that which is going to produce can have no more than the amount of substrata of the object that was the that determined its production. The Rambam gives an example. Shemina eish, from fire. Now, what is fire? Fire is a combination of two things. There are two types of things which are which constitute fire. Hacham v'hayoves, that which is warm and that which is dry. I'm not exactly sure what he means, that which is warm and dry, but I think that things that are very warm and very dry tend to start fires, as people who live in Vaseret and Telstar will probably be able to testify. So it's what you would call mistavra. So basically, in other words, fire can produce something that basically will dry and get hot. V'chein midova hamuka b'chobi v'tzura. If you have something that's composed of both a substratum and a tzura, it's a form, right? You have a substratum, chobi v'tzura. Most of you are aware of that from the Maharal, but really, in fact, the Makor is really Aristotle, right? There's no, I don't remember where in, I don't, I mean, the Maisa, the Lashon of Tzura does appear in Chazal. Tzara Tzura, right? It's a Gemara in Brachos, it's a Drasha. But Choymer and Tzura, I think, is very, very clearly a Aristotelian. So basically, the substratum will can produce only things which have similar substratums, and the of course the tzura too will actually produce some things which also somehow are in the same class of forms. If it's a composite. Very good. So now, if this is true, now this is actually a very critical line in the Rambam. I mean, what's the first thing God could create? What's the only thing God could create? The only thing God could create is Seichel. Since God is not physical, as the Rambam has already informed us earlier in the beginning of the section, God is just Poshut Echad. Right? So the only thing that God is capable of giving rise to is what? Is seichel, is thought. Okay? That's clear. Now, kviya shniya. Now, so that's one axiom that the Rambam begins with. Kviya shniya says the Rambam, lo kol davar mikra mischayah bikol davar mikra. Ele yoylem yebehechach ben ilu la'olo shelo yachas adadi kolsho. אפילו באשר למיקרים, למסחייב איזו מיקרים, מיקרים, מאיזו מיקרים, מיקרים. מיקרים, מיקרים. כגון שכמוס תסחייבו מאיכוס, או איכוס מקבויס. חיים לא תסחייב צורה כלשהי מהחיימר, ולא חיימר כלשהי מהצורה. I'm not really sure what the Rambam means. Professor Schwartz has a translation which says no random accident follows necessarily from any other random accident. I'm not exactly sure what that means. Unfortunately, I did not actually, in fact, look this up at Aristotle, but I didn't see any footnotes for Aristotle. In any case, the Rambam is basically, what the Rambam is doing is just giving another postulate. For example, the Rambam says, quantity can't come from quality. Quality can't come from quantity. Or says the Rambam, for example, in other words, a form can't come from a substrata. A substrata can't come from form. In other words, there has to be like and like. I guess if this is true, so in other words, the Rambam says is that if something is an accidental property, it can only produce something which is also accidental too. Okay, now, is that important really? In other words, if we get this, I mean, Lamana Emes is important that we get this right, but the Tachlis is that we'll see that the arguments the Rambam is making will not be critical how we understand these. Kviya Shlishi, the third axiom is Kol Poil Apoil B'Kavana V'Rotzon V'Lo B'Teva Yeshu Poil Pu'ulei Shonis V'Rabbeis. Right, anything which acts with will, right, and does not act deterministically, so is capable of taking different actions. In other words, if something acts deterministically, so there's only one outcome that can take place. If something acts with Rotzon, so there are multiple consequences, multiple possibilities. Page 331, Kviya Revias, the fourth axiom. Lemichlu hamurka me'atzam shoyim dem smuchim zel azeh, roi yoyse to kovis pashir lemichlu hamurka me'atzam shoyim herkev shal his mazgus. Very interesting. It says the Rambam like this. If you have several things which exist, which coexist, but in other words, they still maintain their identity, it's more likely to call that a hell cave, a mixture, than when things like several things produce epis a synthesis of something. Dugba ledavar, an example, says the Rambam, that for example, you have a bone, etzel marshal, habasa vrid, or etzel pshutim yisa miklal hayad or regal, hanwokim yatzavim basa vridim yatzamos. In other words, if you have, let's say, a hand, it has bone, it has flesh, it has blood vessels, it has nerves, so it's more, right? That's considered to be more of a composite than if you had just, right, one one homogeneous thing. Zebor mechdish noisif v'no baal kach. That's the Rambam says. Now, I was thinking, I mean, I'm an oretz when it comes to a Sotilian thing, but, you know, Zebor says a musaf like this of the osameach. There's we have to speak of learning a little bit. But anyway, it shouldn't be bitl-teya completely, these 13 lectures. But in any case, you should know that the popular opinion, magal b'chubah the poiskim, in fact, is that not only does beira apply to food, but applies to all different types of objects too. So because of that, like every year there's a new ketzer sefer that like basically discovers like a new type of beira that's aser. At the end, like you can't take silverware, you can't take foam, you can't take this. Then at the end, you have, like, you get to like stand still and not, you know, take anything from objects. You probably burn something else. There's an interesting, and also silverware can be burned. Silverware, and it wouldn't go crazy. How can they take the forks out, the spoons out, et cetera, how you take the begadim out? Because a person devotes a good deal of Shabbos towards deciding how he can actually take something meaningful, you know, to use. There's a osamech. What's the osamech? There's an osameach in Parakhes, in Hilchos Shabbos, that says that the Gabi Begadim closed Tol Kol HaPoiskim. The osameach, all the poiskim made a mistake. The osameach says there's no such thing, there's no boira by clothes or by silverware. The osameach, what's the pshat? The pshat is a mixture. What's called a taroivis means that there's an importance in the mixture. In other words, if you have silverware, like forks and spoons, there's no inyan that the forks and spoons should be like all mixed together. There's nothing. In other words, they happen to be together haphazardly. But there's, in other words, you know, there's no reason I have to have a pile of forks and spoons unless I'm, you know, I'm making like a modern, you know, sculpture or something, a modern, free action expression of myself. So in other words, by clothes, he says by clothes and silverware, there's nothing in a boiler. No, the boira. Where is the boira? So, for example, the Gemara says in the boira there's rocks in the soil. The Gemara says on the base in Shabbos, there's a boira. The pshat there is because that's a natural thing. Because Bo created the world, he wanted rocks to be in the soil. There was a reason for the tagoivis. But things that happen to just sort of like fall haphazard together, there's like a boira. I'm not sure if that's what the Rambam is being mechaven to the osameach. Or, but forget for the osameach, right? Dovi, you don't see the Rambam, the shakas, the Rambam. Maybe I bring this a raya to osameach, not only levuchem. But in any case, what he's saying is that, in other words, okay, let's go further. Now, acha gama eila oimer, I'll say, bashir l'mashim etzayin arista, shasech l'arishin hu tzibu l'sheini, that which Aristotle says, that the first seichel, that was once again, how, according to Aristotle, how does God create? Well, the only thing he created is the seichel. This is all explained much more explicitly in Perek Yud Beis. But the first seichel is a reason for the second cycle. Hashem is similar shlishi. Second cycle is a reason for the third cycle. V'chein hala, etc., etc., says the Rambam. Afilu hoyu alfei shlov, even though there are 1,000 steps, ha-seichel ha-achrin mehem hoya poshet bli sofer. There's no question about it that the final seichel, which is usually called the seichel ha-poyel, the active intellect, is going to be poshet. It's not going to be a composite of anything. It's not going to be physical either. Because why? Because it can't contain more than those things that produced it. That's the sort of the Rambam. Mian eifu bali de metzias al derech achiyu kifisha toin aristo het grok was anim tzoy minim tzoy. So now we have a question. Things that we see in the world that are composite, composed of things, where did they come from? In other words, if we begin with God, we certainly begin with God. Aristotle believed in God. We've proven that God created the world. We've proven that God doesn't have a goof.
No, Aristotle.
Aristotle did, yes. The Rambam.
God created the world.
Of course. No, well, God is the first mover. The Rambam's proofs are derived from Aristotle. Not only we begin with God, only the thing that God can produce is a seichel. We end up with the world. What happened in between? You know, it's given the Aristotelian axioms which the Rambam says are agreed upon. We can't explain how God's seichel, which is pasha, you know, devoid of any composite structure, any substratum even, right? It's just seichel, intellect. How can that produce something which is composed of physical things? Which means the Rambam is saying is, how does Aristotle account for the creation of the world? not how the world's created. How does Aristotle, assuming the world's eternal, how does Aristotle account for a deterministic theory in which we're going from seichel, from intellect, from God to intellect, to the physical world, which we behold?
It's not really just Aristotle that's the problem.
Well, he's picking on Aristotle.
He's picking on Aristotle because he himself took all of his own writings from Aristotle. But that's the nature of God.
Well,
if the world is created, it's not the same problem.
No. We'll get to that. It's not clear what the Rambam is asking. The Rambam is absolutely asking a kasha on Aristotle. It's a question of Aristotle. What does the kasha do with turning the world creation? I don't know. It's a kasha. It's a question on Aristotle.
It's not an Aristotle.
What?
It's not an Aristotle.
Okay, fine, but Aristotle I'm too obsessed, so it's also on Aristotle. The inquiry is that it should be a kasha also on Aristotle. Because the Rambam agrees his kasha is on himself too. The inquiry is a kasha also on Aristotle. You shouldn't think that everything Aristotle says is halacha l'meshem yisinai. Now, Noideloi, right? So says the Rambam, I'll admit to him, b'chol mashu mitzayin, sh'chol ha'schich zichli m'chogim yaiseh, noizvim herkev inyonim rav yaiseh, mikevin sh'muzkol yais rabim yaiseh. Now, says the Rambam like this. I agree with Aristotle that as you produce more intellect, the intellects become more intellect composite. What does that mean? In other words, we'll see in a little while, because the intellect has to, like, if intellect, for example, intellect number n produces intellect n plus 1. N plus 1 has to also contain everything in n, plus it has to be thinking about intellect n, which is n plus 1. That's called n and n plus 1. So that makes intellect n plus 1 more complicated, because it thinks about, in other words, God thinks about something, gets a thought. That thought is a thought in itself, it also thinks about God. So the second thought, right, thinks about God. That's how we progress in the world. The third thought, right, thinks about the second thought and thinks about the first thought. How do I know this? Because by the time we get to the Rambam and Aristotle, we're thinking about God. So it must be that the intellects, right, as they progress from God, are thinking backwards about the previous intellects, right? When we learn, we gather information, right? We don't forget things, we gather information, and we learn from things, and therefore, we're not only mechadish, we make new things, but we retain old information. So in other words, every intellect, right, retains the intellectual facts of the previous intellects, thinks about the other intellects.
Why is it more complex?
It is more complex.
More in quantity.
No, because not only is there thought, but there's thought thinking about thought. For example, there's the Gemara. Then there's the Rishonim on the Gemara. And then there's the Achron on the Rishonim.
And here you're stuck, you're stuck with thought and you can't progress out, you can't make anything.
No, nothing different. No, the Rambam is not saying how we get to physical things. The Rambam is just saying is he agrees.
In Sichli, if you say that...
In Sichli, in other words, we have more complicated, in other words, in an intellectual sense, we have more multi-layered intellectual thoughts. That's what the Rambam is saying.
In axiom number 2...
Yeah.
I forget that.
You'll get it with the axioms. This is what I'm saying. I'm saying it's a double pleasure. Svara. What? You give me an idea. So I can always think about that. See, I've shot to that idea. And when I said
the thoughts of God are each saying shots.
Right. That's how it works. God thinks a thought. That thought thinks about God. And then the thought that it produced thinks about itself too. In other words, every thought thinks about the thoughts that came before it.
Why is that not in the world in the Rambam view? Why is that not Avodah Zarah?
Let's not accuse the Rambam of being a pagan right now. Why is that Avodah Zarah? Because Avodah Zarah and the Rambam.
Because now the thought has independent existence. From
first of all, you should know something. You should have asked this question a long time ago. Let me ask you a question. If God, the Rambam says in chapter 68, in section 1, that God thinks like God, essence of God is thinking, and man thinks like God's thinking, right? Rishimu, right? My article on negative theology, right? Why is that Avodah Zarah? So it's very, very simple, right? Avodah Zarah is only on something physical, not on intellectual things. I could say that the essence of God is his intellect, because since it's not physical, it's not called Avodah Zarah. That's clear. Right? Okay? Fine. Now, let's go further.
But I mean, what, sorry, it comes out that the whatever, thought N, is more complex than God is.
No. Oh, well, yes. Well, that's true, because God is more partial. It's monotheism.
That's the problem.
That's,
right, okay.
That's monotheism. Monotheism is that God is partial. Partial to Yid. I mean, I'm going to pshuta. No, God is the most partial thing. He's so partial we can't even imagine it. Well, things become more complex and we can already talk about them. Okay, fine. I mean, but the Rambam says that's true. However, he says, as the Rambam, minayin, right? So it says, Hasechel achim hem haya poshutli safek. Minayin eifel bali de mitzias al derech achim, kevisha ton aristo, hisra koibis an imtsoim and imtsoilu. But how do we come to the physical world, which is composed of different things? Because even though the last seichel, the last intellect might seem more complex, but it's still partial, it's not physical. So he says, well, I'm sorry, I'm going back. No, the loy, that the seichel more complex. Ach gamim naskim, le intuitia, vashara zoi shalom. Even if we agree to Aristotle's intuition, by the way, Aristotle never saw these intellects. I mean, this is a hashara. He's hypothesizing them. How do you get from intellects to these celestial spheres? What connection could there be between something which is physical to something which is not physical? This is the big question. There's no connection. We agree that the thing that produces the first sphere is a seichel. But tzulahan is keres, in the way in which, you know, in the form in which we discussed. The seichel is composed of two things, that's what I mentioned. In other words, there's the seichel itself, and what it thinks about the other thing too. Right? So in other words, basically, you have this seichel, which is a two-layered, two-tiered seichel, complexity number two. It's, you know, it's its own seichel, thinks about that other seichel. But how do you get, right, to the galgal, which is something more than a seichel? How can a sphere come from something which is posh? It's going on and on, the same thing. A galgal composed of two things, of two substrata and two forms. What are these two things? Okay, this is actually a koich of a takua. I see that in number 12, Professor Schwartz says, Stella Nebulat Losa. I don't have the clerk now to research what is a stella nebulosa. It's not important. The point thing is that in the spheres there's two things. There's two substratas and two forms. But how do you get that from the seichel, which is something which is right, which is not physical? Okay. In other words, you need something which is physical, which produces this composite in the sphere. Etc. So now like this, what is he saying the following thing? Right? He goes on and on. I want to go to the last paragraph on page 332, because basically the Rambam is sort of like parting on the kashas, asking the questions. It's a sheer klali. But Batsim, he's already made his point. His point is that we cannot cross the divide between intellect and matter. Which means that Aristotle's account of the causal link from God to the physical world, right, has a black hole in it. That's the Rambam's kasha. Now, why is this only kasha and Aristotle? We'll get to that. But anyway, we asked the kasha and Aristotle. Okay, now. Bikamas Baalacha. From here it's clear. We speak about the stuff, the matter of the spheres, or the matter of the stars. It doesn't mean anything. What can this chayma be? It's only things that they have in common. It's not really a chayma, because how can it come from an intellect? Basically, we can't speak about the chayma of Gulgalim. Which means basically there's a reductio ad absurdum in our time science, because once we don't understand what we mean by the chum of the Gulgalim, how can we account for the physical world? Because those are the first determinants for the physical world. So on page 333, so like this, this is all if you believe in Aristotle. But what? But if you believe, says the Rambam, she calls it a kavonis bechuvin, that this was placed there intentionally. Intelligent design. But if you agree that what? This was placed there deliberately. And this is what God's wisdom somehow required. And we cannot, we have no way of what? Of ascertaining, of conceptualizing this wisdom. We cannot answer these questions. That's why God made it. That's why God made it. You don't ask these questions. A person who believes that he can everything's determined. A person who believes that he can give a scientific account from the intellects of God to the physical world, he has to answer those questions. But we don't answer those questions. We're except answering those questions.
What does that mean?
Zoisideia, this opinion of Aristotle, scientific, very anti-scientific, the Rambam here. It doesn't, in other words, it's not consistent with reality. It doesn't convince us. We have set very difficult questions. And absurdities that come from the Aristotelian philosophy. Because everybody agrees there's a God who's completely perfect. It turns out that God did create the world. And now that's a theological problem. Why? If God is perfect, how come he can't create a world? If God is perfect, he can't create a world because you have no way of explaining how God created the world. If he wanted to tear off the feather, I don't know, kanaf, the feather of an ant, a flying ant maybe, right? Or to take away one leg from a worm. I didn't know these things had feathers and worms. What's the problem speaking about?
The fly.
Loy yachol. He couldn't do that. Avaristo, Imish, Akel, any rights and besides. We have shoulder houses, Akhar, Bizer. Now, okay. Now, what's interesting is he makes an argument here at the very, very end. The Rambam would say that God doesn't want to do this. And if he wanted, he couldn't do it. He can't want to do a thing of nature. So says the Rambam, maybe this is a chisaron in God, which is interesting, because in chapter 13, and we've spoken about it, I think we spoke about it in other words, the Rambam understood that one of the powerful arguments for the Aristotelian theory of eternity is that it was much more monotheistic. But the Rambam says it's much. It might be more monotheistic, but you don't get a world on the other end. Which means that what you have according to the Rambam is there is a dichotomy. In other words, there are two complementary things that, in other words, they don't sit side by side. In other words, if you pull the string from the monotheistic end, you can pull it from the physical end. Now. What does he want from Aristotle? Look at the end, because how does the Rambam explain it? Now, you can say the Rambam says that's what God wanted. So what is And also, too, I mean, hasn't the Rambam told us many times in the Mor Nevuchim that the Rebbe is Aristotle? So I'm going to say an interesting thing. He's going to say, in conclusion, I'm going to say to you, the Kanoim, now these are not the religious Kanoim that are demonstrating today in Me'en Sharim. These are the Aristotelian Kanoim who say that, I don't understand, Aristotle. I'm not going to hold back what I think. Everything Aristotle says, from the moon downward, no doubt is correct. Whoever wants to reject him, right, is irrelevant. But everything that Aristotle says from the moon above, that means the celestial spheres, where there isn't really matter as we understand it, calls him an intuition of Ashara. This is only hypothetical reasoning, intuition, guesses, conjectures. Lemaik Sastavarim, with a few exceptions. In other words, the Rambam is saying is that Aristotle, right, has, right, in Aristotle, we have this split dichotomy, a wedge between the terrestrial world and the celestial world. What Aristotle says about the celestial world is obviously correct. What he has to say about what he says about the terrestrial world is obviously correct. Without doubt, says the Rambam. What he says about the celestial world, says the Rambam, it's conjecture. And certainly what he says about the intellects that are before the celestial world, before the spheres. There's clearly disparities and contradictions which are clear. And things, basically, bad ideas and conjectures that there are terrible proofs for. Okay, now, very nice. You have kashas on Aristotle. What are you proposing? Rambam is proposing, well, if you believe that Kodesh Baruch Hu is a will, then necessarily we don't have to look for a deterministic structure. But doesn't that undermine most of the Mor Nevuchim, most of the guys who are perplexed? If that's true, go back to the Kalam. What? If it's true that it's all intelligent design, that God just does what he wants, there's no real underlying, physical and natural law, right? So we're back to the Kalam. So the Rambam will say no. The Kalam is trying to apply these irrational rules to the physical world, right? And that the Rambam will say, in the physical world, we have to go with Aristotle. But in the celestial world, certainly the intellectual, the world of intellects, right? Then there are many contradictions we can't answer. The question is, what is he getting at? What?
It's not a qualitative difference. It's just quantity.
We'll say. What I want to read a little bit further, and I want to try to understand everything we've said. Because it's not clear where is the Rambam going. I mean, it's very, very nice to say, I have steels, this and that, but, I mean, so what? It doesn't prove anything. So the steels. I mean, the Rambam basically agrees physically with Aristotle. So what is the Rambam offering? Even if you say this is the will of God, there's still no understanding. Unless the Rambam wants to say that, well, the world is, we don't understand it, but that seems to undermine most of the Mor Nevuchim. Al Titma, so on page 334, the third law, in second paragraph, Al Timtach Bikarat Alai. Don't criticize me. Who's the Rambam speaking to? He's speaking to Aristotelian. You see, he's not speaking. I mean, he says who he's speaking to, people who have learned physics and philosophy. He says, don't criticize me. Yes, because you have doubts. You have doubts. You can undermine something. Yes, you have doubts, right? It's a special Yiddish. From Akasha, right? Just because you have doubts doesn't mean that you can undo the entire thing, as we know. You can't ask questions on science. Just because you have a question doesn't mean you undermine an entire theory. Achen ein a dovakach. But says the Rambam, no. We're going to go with the tradition, in this path. In other words, being that what? In other words, let's look at the Messiah, the tradition of the interpreters of Aristotle. Shri Alexander, Alexander was the interpreter of Aristotle. He views the Gabi Komash Lahucha Chachamoipsis, that which has not been proven rigorously. Roy La Niach Shte Amodis Benugadis. You can look at two points of view. L'Oitz Ilu Sveikas Mischaivis Bekol Echem and Afochem. You have different questions, each of which points a different direction to the different opinions. What you do is you take two sides, you see which side has less questions, you choose the lesser of the two evils. Says Alexander, that's the way he relates to Aristotle's metaphysical assertions, which he has not proven rigorously. He called me Shaba Achai Aristo. Whoever came after Aristotle. Anything which Aristotle said regarding metaphysics, meaning that which is above the physical world, right, has less questions though than any other thing. In other words, Aristotle's theory is not proven, but it's the best of all other theories. This is what we did, says the Rambam. In other words, therefore, says the Rambam, we have two theories, two opposing theories, and we can't prove either one. Kloimar, Hayim HaShamayim is Havel, where the heavens created. Oshen Kayamim Yazim HaYolam, or in fact, did they always exist? Hisbano is Hasvekas HaMeschayim Mikol Achaz B'Shtei Adeyas. We've discussed the doubts that apply to each theory. We've shown that the eternal universe gives rise to more doubts. And certainly is much more damaging in terms of what is faith to believe about God. In addition to this, that the fact that the theory of creation is nihilo is the opinion das of Amavino and Nuvienu Mashi Rabbeinu Aleim Hashalom. Right? Now, what has he done? First of all, very interesting is that everything that he said was had to do with the eternity of the universe, the creation of Nihilo. He's just speaking about Aristotelian science. He's not speaking about creation of Nihilo.
According to Aristotle.
Number two, I don't understand really. Hashemayim, his Havel is Platonic theory. He's not even speaking about creation ex nihilo. In other words, he's comparing the Platonic theory to the Aristotelian theory. I mean, Hashemayim his Havel means what? Which means the heavens were created from a primordial, right, amorphous and formless substance. That's Plato, as opposed to Aristotle, which means that what? That nothing was created. But where's creation of Nihilo? And it's interesting, if you look very carefully in the Rambam, he says, V'zois doisim lois ha-chidish das avram avinu. Now he brings Chiddush. What is Chiddush? Chiddush mandak ha-shemei. Who mentioned Chiddush? Up to now he's been proposing, and also too, another thing too, if we go with the Platonic theory, I mean, how do these questions become more answerable? I mean, Plato also has to explain somehow the connection between God and between the physical world, or the intellects of the physical world. Or maybe not.
According to Aristotle, I don't understand why there's a kashas.
Why? Because
if God is sichli, and according to Aristotle, all the physical things always existed, so what's the kasha that simply can't make?
No. We're speaking about Aristotle doesn't believe the world was created next to him, but Aristotle believes that there's a chiyu. There's a causal chain from God to the physical world. It's just that this causal chain is eternal. what's Aristotle's thing? Aristotle says that God pushes something, which pushes something, which pushes something, right? Which pushes my arms, which are going around in a circle. All Aristotle's saying is that God, kivyachol, is like Sisyphus. He's always been pushing. But there's a deterministic causal chain between the initial, right, formless, pusher, and the world which moves. But the question is here, what is the Rambam gaining? Because the Rambam also has to agree that once God creates the world, that's the Elo, there's going to be a causal change. I mean, Rambam's interested in creation. He's not interested in... Well, the Rambam can agree with everything Aristotle says. The Rambam just says that everything had a beginning. But once things are created, right, then of course there's going to be a causal change. The Rambam does, there's no reason for Rambam to argue on Aristotle at that point. Not to mention the fact that at the very, very end, we're completely confused. I mean, what... because... The Rambam is going to agree. I mean, in the Rambam's entire Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam speaks about celestial spheres and intellects. He began chapter 12 with that. I mean, the Rambam doesn't agree with any of these things. Look at the Yad. The Yad speaks about celestial spheres, purely Aristotelian. I mean, obviously the Rambam understood. I mean, in other words, the Rambam's arguing with Aristotle is with creation. We've spoken about it, the concept of God having a free will. But in terms of understanding the physical universe, the Rambam has nothing to pick with Aristotle. The dispute between Aristotle and Plato is a dispute how we understand physics, but it has nothing to do with creation necessarily. That's those are the relevant questions we have to ask. What is the Rambam doing in this chapter? And what's interesting is, in other words, in the previous chapters, the Rambam spoke about free will, and what things have to be the way they are. Okay, so that fits into the concept of Christian Theolo, which we've developed over the last 13 lectures, namely, God's, ability to negate. In other words, the conceptual concept of creation ex nihilo, it's not the theory of creation. But in other words, putting, poking holes in Aristotle's, celestial mechanics that he calls the metaphysics, right? Has nothing to do with creation ex nihilo. Oh. So I want to claim the following thing. What really is the Rambam's argument over here? I want to claim the following like this. First of all, we have to understand in each of these chapters who is the Rambam writing for. Because there seem to be certain chapters in which we've spoken about the fact that the Rambam, of course, is writing to a spectrum of people. I mean, the people who understand perhaps what we've understood to be the true message of the Rambam, which we've been claiming the Christian theology is not a theory of creation. And between, most people understand the two theories, right, to be opposing to each other. Now, the Rambam, clearly, in chapter 22, is writing to what I would call the Hamainam, in other words, the popular conception. And what the popular conception is, I have two theories which are opposing to each other. That's the popular conception. It was the popular conception, in other words, even though the real position of the Rambam, as we've tried many, many times to explain, is that really there is no contradiction between the two, between Kreshek and Nihilo. But nonetheless, the popular conception, right, this is Kiruv, the popular conception is that the two theories are opposed to each other. And we see clearly here that that's what the Rambam is saying. In other words, the Rambam is saying is, what we have to do is, we have to take two theories and compare them to them. In other words, even though the Rambam's real position is that there's no contradiction between creation ex nihilo and Aristotelian theory. But this chapter, there's no question about it, this chapter, right, this chapter was not written for those people for whom the ultimately the Rambam wants to reach. This chapter is being written for the less intelligent audience. And that's what the Rambam is saying. Now, how do I know the Rambam is doing this, besides the fact that this is actually what he's, this is the substance. The Rambam says, don't attack me, don't accuse me. In other words, who's the Rambam talking to? He's not talking to his audience. He's talking to the intelligent reader. He says, I'm not talking to you. I'm not talking to you. In other words, don't accuse me of being anti-Aristotelian. I've got to speak to the Pashinian in here. I've got to speak to the simple Jews. That's what he's saying. He says, even though I know the Kanayim, who are the Kanayim? They're not guys in Meir Shabbat. The Kanayim, right, says Professor Schwartz, a Kanayim Laristo. Even though the Kanayim are going to attack me, what are you doing, Rambam? You're revolting against Aristotle. The answer is for the Hamainam who don't understand Aristotle, who don't understand my theory of creation. I've got to I've got to present like you have two theories, and they're in fact actually not. What are these two theories? So it's very, very interesting like this. I'll give an example. I noticed, for example, let's take like some of these programs. Like now that we're sitting here in maybe it's undisclosed location in Yerushalayim, and they bring all these groups in. They're bringing all these groups in, right? And I don't know what they're going to do, but they're going to bring all these groups in. And I go, well, you know, let's not be political. I don't really know for sure. But over the last year or two, I noticed that that some people have given me some of these books that that argue against evolution. So these kashas. This kasha, that kasha. How do you explain it that this thing works so, you know, the eyes, so this, all kashas. What does it prove? Doesn't prove anything. I have a kasha because science hasn't gotten to the point where it's explained it yet. I mean, I can't. I don't have a theory that unites gravity with the other three forces. That means that all of the, that means that my cell phone doesn't work. That's ridiculous. What?
That's why I don't have one.
Right. That's ridiculous. Of course, everything has kashas. What? The point is, why do you make an argument like this? It's not a scientific argument. A scientist makes an argument, he has to look at the entire theory. A theory changes in paradigm if there's overwhelming evidence that contradicts theories. Because I have a kasha here and there, doesn't mean I do it with a theory. Except that what? That's the way the scientist works. But the Hamainam can be psyched out. Ah, there's a kasha. How do I explain that the eye works like this? I can't explain it anywhere. It must be that evolution is all wrong. Well, like this guy 2 years ago said, how could it be the electron could be away with a particle? It must be the quantum physics is all wrong. Can't believe a person would have the bullshit to say something like that. But you know, what I'm saying is, for the Hamainam, might you hear this? This is my shot. For the Hamainam, it's enough. It's like a lawyer. I have to contradict your testimony. I have to raise suspicion. I have to puzzle you. You can't explain this. You can't explain that. And you notice that the Rambam is being very, very defensive. He says, I know. Don't. He says in page 334, Al timtach bikayre, don't criticize me. Because I brought all these fakers. I brought all these doubts. And you're going to say, do you think, with a bunch of doubts, you destroy a whole theory? So he brought Alexander. He didn't answer the question. He brought Alexander. You have two theories. What's the Rambam doing? What the Rambam is doing is speaking on two levels. He's saying, don't ask questions on me. I'm speaking to a different audience right now. For a different audience is enough that I ask certain questions. You know what? The Rambam couldn't even have answers for these things. I'm sure he had answers for these things. But all he has to do is ask enough questions to beschmutz Aristotle's theory, celestial theory, and because of that, right, I can say, you see, everything's Eberstein. The Eberstein wanted it. That's all I have to do. Oh, so now I have two theories. So pick, so choose. Oh, we're not going to choose a Avraham Avinu Moshe Rabbeinu. That's who he is, the chapter. This chapter was not written to the intelligent reader. It was written to the ignoramus. The Rambam sets out messages. Don't criticize me. I'm speaking to somebody else. That's the pshat in the chapter. Rabbi Sedley, you hear what I'm saying?
At the end of chapter 21, the Rambam says, Hine achshav ani maschil lavi Yisrael sai, v'adavti lias ha'olam mechodesh lefi da'atenu. Rakim Shiavo. What does that mean? It means not going to Rambam's das, it means going to Hamanam's das?
Yeah. That's what that Tainoim means, the Jewish religion.
I mean, he set himself up. This is a real proof over here, so you can skip the first.
That's right. Minutes. That's right. And let me tell you something. What's interesting is that really the Rambam's actually proven it in chapters 19 and 20. Was he going out again? But he wants to reach the Hamayna. That's going to be the Makom HaPatish. Your wife wants him?
Why? Why are the Hamayna going to read all these chapters until he gets to 20?
Like, because the Hamadan goes on and on.
To start off a book like this, and then when they give up, you can get over the real.
No, because I claim no, because this is going to be the end. This is what he says, I'm going to prove it to you. Was he? Was she announced I'm going to prove it to you? Ah! It's like Haydn Surprise Symphony. Ah! I remember one time when I was a bacher, I lived in Far Rockaway. And in Far Rockaway, there was a Rabbi Yankel Stefanski. You know Yankel Stefanski? Mm-hmm. You know Stefanski? His wife, Zichron Levracha, was a daughter of Motka Savitsky. Motka Savitsky was a rav in Boston. It was a tremendous Iloy. In fact, I think they once, he was a bit kanoi too, I think they were once speaking about making him the rav of the Badats. I think he, as a young boy, he wrote as a young boy, Mechtovim with the Rechava. Motka Savitsky was a very big guy. I remember one time he came to Far Rockaway to visit, I guess he was going to visit his daughter and son-in-law. His daughter was, by the way, was a very chashuva lady's daughter. And she passed away young. And they put out the Chochem Balayil, and Wilchem was going to give a shir klali in the Aguda. The goodies says, oh. So, Leil Shabbos, after the meal, it was winter, so it was pretty early. So all the London of Far Rockaway, you know, came to him, Wilchem Savetsky. So he gets up there and he says, I'll speak at the Daf Yomi, since everybody's holding the Daf Yomi. He's not giving a Shia, and like within 15 minutes, he's lost everybody. And some of them are saying, chutzpah, you know, he's lost everybody. He's basically lost everybody. And then he's going on and on, and no one's listening, no one's following. And then I think, like, all of a sudden, one of the Balabatim, who's talking with had fallen asleep for a while, and all of a sudden, like, so, I don't know, like, the chair fell. I'm like, you know, he snored this and that. And everybody started laughing. And I think Avi Savitsky got the message, like, no one was listening anyway. So he says, oh, so we'll say some mili dagarata. Ah, people are rustling, now we'll be able to understand something. Absolutely, begins with after, and once again, it's not a pilpul. So at the end of 15 minutes, a guy shouts in the Yiddish, he says, the guy, why don't you snore again? What I want to say is, that's the Pshat. The Pshat is when the Rambam announces, he proclaims, now I'm going to destroy them. That's the message.
After one chapter, they fall asleep again?
Yeah. That's the Pshat. Okay, very good. Baruch Hashem, I think we've taken care of chapter 22. And we're marching towards chapter 23, which is Mitzvah Shem. Chapter 23 is actually very, very, very short. Chapter 24 is quite long. And chapter 25 is a critical chapter in which the Rambam will actually tell us what we're allowed to and not allowed to believe in. Okay, we'll stop over here. Be well.